Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Excuse me. Hope you enjoyed your July 4th Independence Day weekend, long week in the case of Amy.
Right. Well, I had my mother-in-law passed away from cancer.
Very,
so
very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but she wanted me to be there. So thank goodness that Debbie, Jeff Reisman, Marcus, you guys were okay with me leaving. And it was. I've learned a lot about the death process. She wanted to do it her way, and she did it her way. She didn't want to be in a hospital. She wanted to be at home. So she died peacefully. Didn't complain ever. Was ready to meet her maker, ready to meet the Lord. So.
Well, there's some solace in that for sure.
Yes.
Well,
and what did you do for the 4th of July?
You know, hung out, played a little golf.
I noticed you have a new golf shirt on there.
It's not new.
Oh. Oh, it's from Los Cabos. Oh, golf courses that you guys didn't invite me to on our trip.
We played at this. You played that course at Los Cabos.
Oh, that. Oh.
Because it's the only place, course they played at Cabo.
Oh, that's right. That was Los Cabos. That was in Cancun where I got bigfooted.
The mind. It's the second thing to go.
Or did I ever really have it?
Over the weekend, of course. The big event, not Independence Day. The big event was...
fireworks on the Dan Ryan.
Yeah, the Dan Ryan shutdown. And let's see, the totals are in from the weekend. And 5 dead, 35 wounded. So apparently, those individuals involved in that violence were not apprised of the Dan Ryan shutdown. Otherwise, they would have known the war was over. Because this was the shutdown of the Dan Ryan to end Chicago violence.
Right.
And when Father Flager and Jesse Jackson Sr. say they're going to do something, well, by gosh, they do it.
But they were originally scheduled to have one lane for the protest. So it was supposed to be one lane inbound Dan Ryan from 79th to 67th. But that wasn't good enough. They needed more. So they took over the entire 5 lanes of the Dan Ryan. It's one of the busy expressways in the country.
Yeah, well, so... The
traffic backups were hours long.
The name of the march was not shut down one lane on the Dan Ryan. It was shut down the Dan Ryan. So that's what they're going to do, make a break.
We made them clear we are coming to shut down the Dan Ryan. We are not settling for anything less.
Yeah, they will not settle for anything less.
And they didn't.
We need an aggressive plan. If there's not an aggressive plan to help equalize the south and the west side to the north side, then we'll get ready for another civil disobedience.
And that's why. So spin the wheel and pick your next expressway. I'd probably go...
We've already shut down Lake Shore Drive. That's old.
No, I mean, it's got to be an expressway. I'd go maybe the Kennedy.
Oh, don't touch my Kennedy.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to shut down the Kennedy next. I don't know. I mean, I'm open to... to 290 out to the Reagan, but but probably the Kennedy. I think.
You think? Nah.
I think that should be next.
Maybe by the junction, so you can get in the Little Edens there too.
Yeah. Did this disrupt your trip? I mean, it's a lot of moving vans making their way to Northwest Indiana on the Dan Ryan. So I wonder if this disrupted anybody's trip to their new homes in Northwest Indiana from Chicago. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
And Superintendent Johnson, he was the one who asked Illinois State Police to help out with the shutdown. And he marched with the protesters. And so did Tiny Dancer, because, you know, they're down with the struggle.
There's no question about it. Tiny Dancer green-lighted the shutdown of the Dan Ryan, where people are trying to forge some kind of compromise with the Flager and the crew. Tiny Dancer gave them the full green light. And it's interesting to note, just in terms of how orchestrated this may have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Father Flager and Tiny Dancer have history. History like in 2015, 4 years ago, when Flager backed Rahm for mayor.
Oh.
After he was endorsed, Tiny Dancer, by an anti-gun group, Father Flager sent out a missive saying, among other things, the mayor's work on violence, fighting for stronger gun laws, and the city's new gun ordinance is a critical step in leading the fight for our youth. Rahm has stood up for our neighbors and our children. Chicago institutions that have been around for hundreds of years have endorsed him. They know we can be a better city. So maybe because Rahm has no street cred in the community, this was Rahm prompting Flager to do this little spectacle for the purposes of then setting up Flager to re-endorse Rahm for some street cred in that community, at least a segment at least of which he needs.
So a little
American community for re-election come the winter of next year.
Well, see, I mean, and then too, I understand why they wanted this. I mean, gun violence, the number of homicides is crazy. This is one woman who just turned 30.
I just turned 30 yesterday, and I've lost pretty much every friend I graduated high school with.
But the gun violence needs to stop. We need more gun laws. We need more money for these schools.
Yeah.
And they want, you know, infrastructure. They want manufacturing jobs. They, you know, Father Flager had a list of demands, things he wanted done.
No, we got their attention. Today we got their attention, and hopefully they saw the masses of people who got their attention. The next thing is the goal. Our young people sent letters to the governor and the mayor and all the candidates running for mayor and governor and said, sit down with us. We have ideas what you need to do. You tell us what you're going to do. We need an aggressive plan. If there's not an aggressive plan to help equalize the south and the west side to the north side.
Yeah, then he's going to shut down.
What do we want? An aggressive plan. When do we want it? Sometime soon. What are we going to do? Send letters.
They're sending letters. I'm just letting you know.
What else are we going to do? Shut down another expressway. What else are we going to do? Offer up the same tired solutions that have been tried. It's a great rallying cry. Tom in Schaumburg.
Hey, let's follow the money. Rahm Emanuel had his point man, Forrest Claypool, calling Bruce Rauner a racist for 3 years straight before Rauner finally caved and gave hundreds of millions of dollars to Tiny Dancer for Chicago schools. Now he's got his other point man, Flager, telling us that they need hundreds of millions of dollars for enterprise zones, and that's going to end the violence in Chicago. Is there anything other than money here?
No, it's the money from the government as a means of government control of territories that are already government controlled. West Side and South Side are wholly owned government enterprises, and the lives of most of the people in those communities are completely dependent on the government. So we want more of that. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for taking my call. Sorry to hear about your loss to your mother-in-law, Amy.
Oh,
I'd shut down 190. Do you know what 190 is?
Yeah. Around O'Hare.
Yeah, and O'Hare. And then let people have to take the CTA into O'Hare. That ought to create a lot of chaos.
All right. But maybe you can be a consultant to Flager, Bob. Get some of that cash.
Or they could take down the CTA and 190.
Tom in Deer Park.
Oh, good morning, Dan and Amy. Listen, this time I'm really worried. If you know what hedonic adaptation is.
Hedonic adaptation. Yeah.
That was the name of your elementary school band.
No, it's a resort in Jamaica.
That's the notion in human nature that when you do something, the thrill of doing it reduces every time you do it. In other words, a tolerance to drugs or something like that. You need more and more and more. And this is why I'm truly concerned for Father Flager. I'm wondering, you know, after shutting down the Dan Ryan, to your point, what's next? I'm concerned maybe he's going to take it to a bigger stage, possibly go to D.C., and scale the Washington Monument, or maybe even do self-immolation after that.
Self-immolation.
That would be the last caper. So that's why I'm concerned for him.
Self-immolation. Okay, thanks. She's going to go full Buddhist monk sort of thing.
I don't know if he could scale that.
By the way, just on the money front, too, just so we understand, right, the per-people expenditures in CPS have gone up at a 45-degree angle. Actually, if anything, when it comes to employment, the employment picture for blacks and Latinos in Chicago, like the rest of the country, is at sort of historic bests.
Right.
So there must be something else going on. One of the things that Father Flager misunderstands, and those of his same thinking, is that poverty equals violence. There is a very weak correlation between socioeconomic status and violence. Very weak. So, no, as I say often on this show, but I know I'm the racist, no, most of the people on the South and West Sides are law-abiding, even though they don't have resources, even though they're not wealthy or even, you know, stable financially in most cases, low household incomes. That doesn't make you a lawbreaker. People have that wrong. The evidence is clear. Father Flager is a demagogue. So is Jesse Jackson Sr., obviously. So is Tiny Dancer. But it's a demagoguery that denigrates the people they say they're there to represent. Because you're poor, you're more likely to be a criminal. Not true. That's not the problem. The problem is, the main problem in Chicago, is we have repeat violent offenders that are not prosecuted and or incarcerated. And that's also something that Father Flager and Jesse Sr. and Tiny Dancer and Kim Fox, that's also something they have no interest in doing. Incarcerating repeat violent offenders. And we can give you case after case if we've done on this show. There's a good piece in City Journal that provides a couple more examples more recently of that problem. So on the one hand, they're minimizing the law-abiding nature of this constituency, the parishioners in St. Sabina. They're infantilizing them for the purposes of bringing government in to run their lives for them. And on the other hand, the actual predators in the neighborhood that would make the neighborhood safer were they prosecuted and incarcerated, well, open the jail cells and don't put anybody new in. Ron in the South Side.
Hey, Dan, you're right on point. And see, Eddie Johnson has stated that. See, so you know what? That's all he had to do was tell Father Flager and the rest of those phonies that's what the problem is. But another thing you mentioned, I heard him on the radio station down the aisle last week, and he was asked, "What didn't you support Rahm Emanuel?" You know what he said? "Oh, yeah, I kind of fell for the sweater." Man, this ain't nothing but three-card Monty. This is just a big game. And lastly, one thing I will agree with him when he said demonstrations bring about change. You know what? That's on there. Get rid of him and the rest of that garbage down this city council. Have a good day.
Thanks, Rod. Yeah, demonstrations bring about change when there's moral high ground to be had. That's the difference. This isn't the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement had the moral high ground. There's no moral high ground here. It's a den of thieves, which is why I've suggested my candidate for mayor is Father Flager.
Oh.
I mean, he's just another politician in this mix. That's what he is. Let's have him run for mayor. Because the one thing that Flager does, even when he's doing the bidding of Tiny Dancer, is he freaks out and he exposes the cowardice of the C-suiteers and all those self-styled civic leaders in Chicago, as well as the entire wannabe tough guy political class, little guys like Rahm. And it's fun to watch. It's about the only pleasure you can extract from our politics or city governance. Joe in Hoffman Estates.
I think that a great thing that they could do is if Father Flager, Tiny Dancer, and pretty much most of the city council, and then the whole group that was out there, Dan Ryan, went out in the middle of the night and swam across Lake Michigan. And this way they could stop boats that are coming in and set up
protests. Sure, take the protests. Air, water. Yeah, very good, Joe. That's a good idea. We forgot about the other means or transportation
the other hot spots in Chicago,
channels.
Right. Yeah.
So we got to shut down the Chicago River. We got to shut down
Lake Michigan.
Shut down the Chicago Yacht Club. We start there. And then we got to shut down rail.
Oh, that right.
And then
Metro.
Then they have to do some kind of like Golden Knights parachuting formation to shut down the flight patterns at O'Hare and Midway. Good idea, Joe. Thanks.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, over the long holiday weekend, you had a lot of random acts of civility offered up by the left to improve our political discourse. We'll get to that in a second, but got a couple of flagger stragglers here. Bob on the southwest side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Okay, I'll make it very, very fast. There's a few things I want to say.
Okay.
I might belong to a Catholic church on the southwest side of Midway Airport. I went to the noon mass. The pastor said, please, whatever you do, because I know him well. He said, don't complain. I said, so many people at the earlier mass are saying they're not going to donate anymore to the Catholic church because of the civil disobedience. Father, the Catholic church doesn't teach civil disobedience, and he mentioned it two or three times. The police commissioner, because he said civil disobedience, the policemen are out there to protect us. If he says civil disobedience for the next round of stuff he's going to do, it's crazy. And I want to ask you a question, Dan. Where do they get the money for all these buses?
Yeah.
And we called the Catholic Church on Friday, and we asked, how do they afford all this stuff? Well, we have a special fund. Why the Catholic Church always preaches giving money to the poor people? We have boxes for the poor. Why does this money go to the poor people? And my last question is, these marches have not done one darn thing. I don't have any relatives that are policemen. I have a lot of friends, okay? And they all say, if they only would let them have the police stop every car and disregard all the stupid cameras they're taking pictures. One policeman said to me at church Sunday, he said, Bob, the problem is the news media doesn't show what happens to the policeman before. You know, they always show what the policeman does, never what happens before.
Right.
All right.
Well, they also, I hear what you're saying, but also, local station, because I came home and I was poring over their websites. No one interviewed the people that were stuck in traffic. It was a parking lot that went on for miles, and nobody cared. They walked a mile and a half, so that protest lasted well over an hour.
Well, the resources, too, if you saw the pictures of the taxpayer resources with respect to police and all the vehicles that were out there in the time. Yeah, I mean.
Well, people who were off on furlough had to go back to work.
There's no price too high for us to pay, though, for political spectacles here, just as we're happy to pay for the Obamaland tennis and racquetball club or whatever it is.
The green space on the roof. I'm really looking forward to that.
I know he said we weren't going to pay for it. We're happy to pay for it. We're happy to pay for this spectacle. And Dan Ryan, happy to do it.
I wonder how much money it did cost taxpayers.
And now, not only are we happy to do it, you had Cardinal Supich celebrating it. He released a statement, "I applaud the courage shown by young people in our city and across the country demanding their right to life and human dignity given by God and guaranteed by our nation's founders. They make us proud. They give us hope. I encourage them to be bold and undaunted in pressing their case and securing real change to have the peace and security they have every right to expect." They're demanding the right to life and human dignity. Cardinal Supich, I know you're a man of the left. How are your fellow travelers on the left when it comes to the right to life? Let us all join together as Illinois citizens to pray for the success of their cause and pray for the safety of all on Saturday, the marchers, the motorists, and those sworn to protect them. What about in the neighborhoods where 5 are dead and 35 more are wounded over the weekend?
Yeah, it didn't stop the violence, didn't stop the homicides from happening. Also, who blessed the march? The Parkland shooting survivors. David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez.
Boy, that's the highest order.
The Dan Ryan in capitals. The Dan Ryan is currently being shut down. I'm so proud.
It's a high honor to be thought of Cardinal Supich in the and to be mentioned in the same breath as one David Hogg.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And again, no price in terms of human life that's too high for us to pay for virtue signaling leftists that are financed by taxpayers to have their spectacles.
Well, also, I wanted to pick your brain about the Twitter spat between Governor Rahner and Mayor Emanuel. Do you not care about it?
Who cares?
Governor Rahner, he said, "I'm disappointed in the mayor. There was an agreement in place, a plan."
I don't care about a pillow fight between two hack politicians. That's what that is.
But they painted Rahner as a racist because he's just standing up for law and order.
Rahner couldn't be weaker. The only he and his wine club buddy compete to see who is the most spineless, gutless, pathetic politician in Illinois. So they're having a Twitter ping match. They put their jumpers on and they started throwing pillows around. Who cares? These guys are pathetic. Pathetic. The only difference is one is actually deriving a political benefit from this. As I mentioned when we were talking about this earlier, perhaps because Father Flager is once again doing Tiny Dancer's bidding, even though he's speaking truth to power. What Flager's done in the past is genuflect before power on the left.
And our last caller talked about, you know, financing. I heard from one of my sources that St. Sabina is a cash cow. It's a moneymaker that every Sunday they get between $25,000 to $30,000 from their parishioners.
Big deal.
When they pass around the coffers.
Well,
that's one of the reasons why they say they don't shut it down.
Well, give me a break. The sad thing is it has nothing to do with the money. It's all about politics and about image. But the sad thing is that you have Father Flager taking that money from parishioners on the south side that support the parish and using it in advance of policies that further marginalize those parishioners. Mike on the north side.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter's a high school senior at a Catholic high school in the city. She just finished her service week. Every summer, she's got to go live at one of the convents on the south side, and a bus comes and picks them up, and they go to a different school every day and clean it up. Now, why couldn't these people, if they were so interested in their community, do something in the community instead of this spectacle? Now, I don't think anybody who's driving the Dan Ryan every day through Chicago are the people that are coming and committing the crimes in their neighborhood. I don't think it's the Trump supporters who are coming and committing the crimes in their neighborhood. Who are committing the crimes? I think it's the Rahm Emanuel and the Pritzker and the Obama and the Hillary supporters that are doing it. Look at yourself. Don't ask for more money from the government.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Speaking of random acts of civility, elevating our political discourse, there's no violence at the Dan Ryan shutdown, but that's not the case around the country. This went viral. This 30-year-old in San Antonio at a Whataburger out in the San Antonio region goes up to a 16-year-old and who is wearing a MAGA hat, and this happened.
Uh-oh.
You ain't supporting
Alright, have fun with it.
So that 30-year-old Kino Jimenez of San Antonio took off this kid's hat, threw a drink in his face, and then used the N-word to refer to him. He was identified on through the video that went viral because this kid's friend who got his MAGA hat stolen videoed part of it. He's been charged with felony theft after the incident.
Good.
He also lost his job at a local bar due to the incident, and he was disowned by the political party to which he affiliates.
Which is?
The Green Party of Texas.
No, not that.
No. Okay. Now, for his part, the kid who is the victim in this case, this teenager named Hunter Richard, saying that Jimenez can keep the hat, and he said that he'd be happy to speak with Jimenez to see if they can forge some common ground. So there's one random act of civility here locally on July 3rd.
Yeah, what happened?
You had a brick thrown through the headquarters of Wheeling Township's Republican Party. That's your neck of the woods.
Dan Patlack, okay.
Dan Patlack was not injured.
And his wife?
By the brick.
I love the Patlack.
Kathy Penner, committee
is everybody okay?
It was the night of July 3rd, so nobody was there. But threw a brick through the
Wheeling Township
GOP window. Mm-hmm. So you had that. By the way, Kino.
Is there any note attached to it?
No. Kino Jimenez. They did file a police report, though.
Good.
Kino Jimenez, the 30-year-old man who roughed up this 16-year-old kid and stole his hat. That says a lot about the left, too. Said that the hat, him seeing the hat is the same is like seeing a Ku Klux Klan hood.
Oh, please.
So that's why he
needed
was
to save space.
To do it.
Yeah.
Also, this Suffolk County police arrested a man. In upstate New York, who made a terrorist threat against a campaign worker at Congressman Lee Zeldin's campaign headquarters. Martin Astroff was arrested after he threatened to kill supporters of Congressman Lee Zeldin, as well as President Trump. So he was charged with a felony, reckless endangerment, second degree, making a terrorist threat. He was arraigned over the weekend. And then, of course, Steve Bannon was out and about. You know,
oh, yeah. What's he doing? How's his complexion? Is he looking healthier these
days? I haven't seen it. But he got accosted just verbally at a bookstore in Virginia. Black Swan Books, a woman came up to him and said, you're a piece of garbage. You're a piece of trash. And the bookstore owner called the police. So that's just a little bit of a smattering from across the country.
Things are getting better.
And the left's random acts of civility.
That's our segment. Random acts of civility.
Random acts of civility. Underwritten
by Dan and Amy.
And underwritten by Congressman Maxine Waters.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, the left is in full fulmination over Trump's forthcoming SCOTUS pick, which he will announce in prime time tonight.
Yeah, 8 o'clock from the East Room.
Down to, it's perceived that we're down to four finalists. Hardiman, who is the
backup to Gorsuch.
Putative,
right?
Yeah. I mean, nobody really knows that, but that was sort of what was believed to be true.
Yeah, and he was a cab driver. His story is so fascinating.
Just like David Mamet.
Yeah, right. He was a cab driver, first person in his family to go to college. He didn't go to an Ivy League school, but yeah, reports are he was a backup to Gorsuch.
And then Amy Coney Barrett, whose Catholic faith lives loudly in her. And as Dershowitz said over the weekend, if she's the nominee, yeah. Hey, left, you can thank Senator DiFi for that after she made an issue of Amy Coney Barrett's faith when she was during her confirmation hearing for the Seventh Circuit, the appellate court on which she currently sits as a judge.
Yeah, and people are ridiculing her because she's pro-life. She has 7 children, 5 of her own and 2 she adopted from Haiti.
Yeah.
But she lives in South Bend, Indiana, so there's reporters there because 3 of these 4 don't live in D.C., and their every move is being watched. So maybe she'll go to the grocery store today and people will perceive it as, oh, she's going to D.C.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, the 2 Haitian adoptees.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I'm a little confused. So Amy Coney Barrett and her husband live their faith. They adopt 2 children from Haiti to have a better life in this country, and she's excoriated. So I guess that the left just likes children from the Central America.
Oh, that's right.
When they are brought here illegally so they can be used as political mascots. They're not maybe so interested in the actual quality of life or the opportunity. It's just confusing to me, the disconnect. You would think that she would be celebrated for that because they're so concerned. I guess not.
Oh, no. Senator Orrin Hatch wrote an op-ed in the Desert News, and because he was talking about the progressives are going to be ripping on the and attacking the Supreme Court nominee, and he used she and her. So that's why I think it's probably going to be her.
I think probably Orrin Hatch has no idea who it's going to be, but there have been people
that good with the pronouns.
There are people that are advocating for, you know, the other 2 finalists, Kethledge and Kavanaugh as well. There are arguments and op-eds, dueling op-eds back and forth about a number of the finalists. Probably Hardiman has seen the least number of public supporters, but again, he was still vetted now twice, if you will. First, when Gorsuch was ultimately the selection. Leonard Leo, who's sort of the point person for, you know, on leave from the Federalist Society to help Trump with this election, was on with Clinton Foundation Donor Zero over the weekend. And he explained what drives President Trump in this process.
What drives the president in this process is that he made the Supreme Court a huge issue in the election, more than any other presidential candidate. He greatly enthused voters over it. And it was one of the big factors that led to his election and holding the U.S. Senate. And so he kept that momentum going with Neil Gorsuch, and now he's got another opportunity to do it again.
Yeah, it seems sort of refreshing that what Leo is essentially saying drives President Trump in this process is the commitment he made as candidate Trump. It's kind of refreshing. And Leo also suggested that, look, the 4 names that we mentioned, there's not a bad pick among them.
Talk about Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Barrett, Thomas Hardiman, Raymond Kethledge, who I assume are the 4.
Those are the 4, yeah.
Look, they're all extraordinarily distinguished people. Certainly, Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Barrett have a lot of name recognition amongst supporters of the president, amongst people. And I think that ultimately, when people like them are nominated, you'll see a lot of folks line up.
Leah went on to explain, because the Federalist Society is, you know, maybe not particularly well known outside of political circles and conservative circles, but he basically, since really Trump outsourced this putting together of the list during the campaign to Leo and the Heritage Foundation to some extent, but really Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society. What drives the Federalist Society, their purpose?
My goal, first and foremost, has always been to find people to serve on the court who believe in the Constitution as it's written. And that's really ultimately what drives the conservative legal movement. You want judges on the court who understand that the best way to preserve freedom and dignity and prosperity in this country is to have people who are going to interpret the Constitution as it's written and not play politics when they're judges.
And David Brooks, New York Times columnist, Obama's favorite Republican. Yeah, that tells you something. New York Times columnist, of course, but he was on with Ezra Klein on the PBS NewsHour with Judy Woodruff over the weekend, talking about the Federalist Society and these names that have been leveled up. Here's what Brooks said.
Well, it's like we got our old Republican Party back, because these three are not Trumpy people. They're pretty elite, pretty established. And it's a testament to the Federalist Society, which is a conservative legal society that started in the 1980s, designed to create, to turn talent into judgeships. And they've done a fantastic job over the last several decades of producing just this funnel of talent that goes up to all the courts, but especially the Supreme Court. And so whoever the Republican president is, there's a just this whole series of people who are well-qualified, pretty temperate, well-connected with each other, and they're just ready-made. And so it's made to order. It's not a Trumpy set of people. It's a very establishment set of conservative jurists.
And because of what David Brooks said, which I think that's right. By the way, I resuscitated the Federalist Society chapter at Loyola Law School.
Oh, you did?
So,
do you want to do that in the last hour of the show today?
I have. Do I want to do what?
No,
resuscitate?
Yeah.
I deserve much of the credit for whoever the selection is,
basically.
I just wanted to make sure that I get my due.
But who do you want to see? And also, you out there in the audience, 312-642-5600, who do you want to be the next Supreme Court nominee?
Well, I will say this. I mean, I agree with what Leo said and what David Brooks said, which is why I think whoever it is going to get confirmed. It's going to be very hard to gaslight enough senators, for the progressives to gaslight enough senators, particularly red state Democrats facing tough reelections, like Joe Donnelly next door in Indiana.
Hyde Camp and Manchin.
Right. As well as Tester in Montana and others. And even, Collins.
Collins and Murkowski in Alaska. Right?
Well, Collins in Maine, Murkowski in Alaska, right. But Collins voted to confirm Amy Coney Barrett for the Seventh
That's
Circuit.
Right. Okay.
So if she's the nominee,
if she's the nominee, those could be the two Republican holdouts.
Yeah, possibly over, Roe, because the left is in full fulmination over Roe.
Well, Roe, and then also LGBTQZXYT.
Yeah, but it's really Roe.
Said that nobody on the list has demonstrated a commitment to giving a fair hearing to them.
This is about Roe. For the left, it's Roe v. Wade is a sacrament. Roe v. Wade is the left's raison d'etre, really. I mean, it really is to a large extent. And so it was interesting to read this piece by Megan McArdle in the Washington Post over the holiday weekend, who is pro-choice and so indicates, let Roe go. How can someone who calls herself pro-choice oppose Roe v. Wade? Let me count the ways. The decision itself is a poorly reasoned mess. It failed to mount a convincing case that the Constitution contains language that can be read as guaranteeing a woman's right to abort her pregnancy. The poor drafting quasi-accidentally left America with some of the most permissive abortion laws in the world, far beyond what most legislatures would permit if the matter were open to public debate. Today, the United States is one of only a handful of countries to allow elective abortions after the 20th week. All true. So this is somebody who at least is doing like second level analysis. Here's my position. Here's my belief on the political issue. But here's also enough respect for the Constitution and our federalist representative republic form of government that I understand that because it was a poorly reasoned case, the idea that this should be open to public debate is one I support. And different states, if Roe v. Wade were overturned, different states will make different determinations on the permissiveness of abortion within their states. And that's sort of the model. And you can make the same case for the Obergefell decision, that op-ed that Kennedy wrote on the issue of redefinition of marriage. But it's just an interesting piece from Megan McArdle, who's a respected intellect, self-identifies as pro-choice, but can separate herself from the hysteria on the issue, the back alley abortion hysteria on the issue, and say, this is bad law. And because it's bad law, it has no legitimacy among half of the nation. And so the idea that Roe v. Wade ended the debate on this issue, actually, it has just further intensified the debate over the intervening 45 years, hasn't it? And that's what the reality on the ground is. So in terms of, I mean, my choice, if I had to choose from those four.
Yeah, I've been waiting, and everyone was asking me. My mom was asking. Peyton and Eli were asking.
I would probably go with Judge Kethledge.
Really?
Yeah, Raymond Kethledge. Mostly because he wrote a book about the importance of solitude.
Okay.
In terms of living a contemplative life, walling yourself off from people, thinking through things.
Okay.
Not interact. I mean, he didn't take it this far. I'm sort of building on the case he made. But yeah, no, but I think
I'm going with Amy.
I think Kethledge is the either. Most reliable. But,
but how old is he, Kethledge?
Is he early 50s.
Age an issue?
Yeah, all these
50 is a new 30, so you're all right.
All these judges are relatively young.
Amy's
Barrett,
46.
45, I think. Huh. Yeah.
Well, don't I'm age just her have before to time. Look that up. But she looks 29. I mean, really.
So Amy Coney Barrett, Notre
that's
Dame.
That's who I think is, yeah.
That's who you want?
Yeah, that's who I want.
Sure. Solidarity. I get it.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
And it's not just Pritzker's money. It's also SEIU. The Purple People Beaters are coming for these county commissioners, too. And
they
just
look at what they did to John Fritchie, because he voted against the soda tax. And so the person running against him, I mean, they paid for her flyers, for the signs, had people volunteering, walking, going door to door.
They took out Fritchie as well as Richard Boykin in Oak Park in the primary. And the interesting thing, just to tell you, Schneider's district, which was held by Carl Hansen for almost 30 years before him, and then Goslin's district, which was held by Siebel, these are districts that have been Republican for generations, and they are in jeopardy now. And that has everything to do with the Republican Party surrendering at every single turn. There's going to be a reckoning. Or reckoning that will continue. And those that thought they were insulated by playing patty cake with the other side are going to find out they're not.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Who will Trump's Supreme Court nominee be? We'll talk about it when Freedom returns at 5.
And some breaking news from Thailand. The 6th and 7th boys have been pulled out alive from that Thai cave. So
all right,
that's good news.
We'll stay on that, as well as Will Mike Scott, keep you updated on those rescue efforts. But what about all things economic and rescuing our economy here in Illinois?
Nice. I see what you did there.
Story out of Granite City down in southern Illinois, the U.S. Steel plant down there, which I have toured.
Yeah.
They're firing up the furnaces again. Because of, they would argue, because of Trump's tariffs on foreign steel that are affording a plant that was shuttered, laying off 2,000 people just 3 years ago, the opportunity to get jump-started again. This is not inconsistent with what the CEO of U.S. Steel said at the outset of the Trump administration, that he was looking at 10,000 new jobs because of what he believed was a renewed commitment to domestic steel production, even though prior to the tariffs, 3/4 of steel production was domestic. But nonetheless, does this mean that the tariffs are working as intended, and this game of brinkmanship with the Chinese in particular can produce some net positive results? As a free trader, I'm very skeptical, but I do not have the credentials of one Jimmy Pethakoukas, who is a CNBC contributor and columnist for the American Enterprise Institute. So why don't we get his take? James, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hello, James.
Do we have Jimmy? Jimmy Pethakoukas.
This is Steve Moore.
Oh, Steve.
Oh. Remember me? I'm an economist.
Steve Moore.
Steve Moore.
Steve Moore doing his best Jimmy Pethakoukas impersonation.
Are you a winner on Jeopardy?
Okay. All right. Well, Steve Moore,
but
also.
I'm happy to answer your question, guys.
Steve Moore is also an economist with more credentials than I am, even though he only went to U of I, not Northwestern. And so he can answer that question, too. Steve, what about the tariffs and the ratcheting up of brinkmanship between the U.S. and the Chinese?
Well, I'm going to start by saying that so far, just about everything Trump has done on the economy sure seems to be working. I mean, we got that blockbuster jobs report on Friday. We're going to get later this week or early next week, we're going to get the second quarter GDP number, which many economists now believe could be 5% growth. So the economy is absolutely booming right now, 18 months into Trump's presidency. So one of the points I made on CNN the other night was, you know, look, you got to start giving this guy the benefit of the doubt that he knows what he's doing on the economy. Now, we've talked about this before on the show. I am not a fan of the steel tariffs. By the way, where is that steel mill that's reopening?
Granite City in Southern Illinois.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a success story. But the problem is, for every success story you can find on the steel tariffs, you know, you can point to the Harley Davidsons and other manufacturing that has actually been hurt by the steel tariffs, where manufacturing jobs are actually put in jeopardy. So I think on balance, given the fact that for every we have something like 100 to 150,000 steel workers in this country, but we have 6 million other manufacturing workers who use steel, and their jobs have been put somewhat in jeopardy by those tariffs. So I think on balance, it's a net loser.
Mm-hmm. Explain why the unemployment rate jumped up higher this last report.
Oh, that's a good reason. You know, because we had, hold on to your hats, guys, 600,000 more Americans enter the workforce. We've been waiting, what, Dan, about 10 years for a number like that?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, the problem has been, Amy, with, you know, we used to joke, remember, on the show on the Obama years, you know, Obama was going to get the unemployment rate down to zero because everybody was going to drop out of the workforce. And you had millions of Americans who just stopped looking for work or went on unemployment benefits under Obama. And so the unemployment rate kept going down, even though the job creation numbers weren't very good. Now we're getting really robust job creation. We have now, according to that latest jobs report that came out on Friday, Amy, something like 5 to 6 million more jobs available than people who can fill them. So the fact is, we're finally starting to see people get off the sideline and get into the workforce. And one of the things, if you're a teenager or you're a young person out there, you know, sitting around your butt this summer, go out and get a job because they are out there.
Well, we've got other big ideas here. It's not just coming from Trump. And I wanted to run this by you since this is sort of your wheelhouse area, energy policy. And that is the new head of the Democrat Party, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, has a plan to, according to the New Republic, a plan to save the planet, nothing less. And who better to save the planet than a waitress who doesn't understand there's no free lunch? She is proposing a Green New Deal, a plan like FDR's New Deal, but to make us energy independent, 100% renewable energy system by 2035. It will be similar in scale to the mobilization efforts seen in World War II or the Marshall Plan, she told the Huffington Post. We must again invest in development, manufacturing, deployment, distribution of energy, but this time green energy. Steve Moore, are you going to be a signatory on the Green New Deal plan?
Well, you know, we were just talking about the reopening of the steel mill. There's an old saying that you can build windmills with steel, right? But you can't build steel with windmills. And so that is a pretty lunatic idea. I mean, the idea that somehow we're going to not produce our, you know, here are the numbers today, by the way. I just looked at those numbers last week. We get about almost 3/4 of our electric power today, you know, our electric power generation in states like Illinois, Massachusetts, and California, 3/4 of it comes from coal and natural gas. You know what percentage of our energy today comes from wind and solar power?
Like what percent?
3%.
We're up to about 5%. 5%.
It?
So, you know, so we're going to go, let me get this
that's
right.
That's why we need
how
the
many
plan.
Birds have lost their lives
that's
for
why
just
we need
5%.
That's why we need this Green New Deal.
Exactly. By the way, we have a very clean, efficient, made in America form of electric power, and of course that is natural gas. It's reduced our pollution levels, reduced our greenhouse gas emissions. It's a source of energy that we have more of than any other country in the world, thanks to the shale oil and gas revolution. Why in the world wouldn't you want to use natural gas? I mean, now the other, by the way, there's another form of electric power that emits virtually zero carbon emissions into the atmosphere. You know what that is?
Nuclear.
Nuclear power. Of course, the left wants to shut down our nuclear plants too. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you want to really put in jeopardy our industrial economy in the United States, try to go with 100%, you know, or even 50%, 30%, you know, renewable energy. What are you going to do in Illinois when the sun isn't shining?
We'll freeze to death. I mean, but that's
Will be turning.
Well, that's a small price to pay for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's ascension.
No, I mean, it is a totally crazy idea. Look, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, by the way, Illinois is a coal state, right? I mean, the United States of America has more natural gas, more coal, and now it turns out more oil. I was just down in the Permian Basin in Texas. We have more of this stuff than any other country in the world. Why in the world wouldn't we want to use it? And by the way, China is laughing. You want to talk about China laughing behind our back in our economic war with China. They're building 50 coal plants right now while we're shutting ours down. How is that going to save the planet?
Speaking of China and these dueling tariffs, you know, Gordon Chang is this scholar who has suggested that.
Yeah, I know Gordon. Yep.
Yeah, that China's a paper tiger and that China is on the precipice of collapse. The Shenzhen is off 40% over the last 3 years. And so what should we be as fearful of China as this looming economic powerhouse as we seem to be, given what Gordon Chang is suggesting?
You know, I'm not an expert on China, but I will say this, that I am pretty good on just sort of how economies work. And China in the last 7 or 8 years has moved away from the freedom model and the free enterprise model that really liberated their economy from Maoism, and you know, moved half a billion Chinese out of abject poverty and starvation. But they've moved in the opposite direction now. They are more central planning. They're state ownership of the means of production. They've moved more back to the socialist model. That history tells us, right? That model doesn't work. And so I do think China may be a bit of a paper tiger, but look, they're a big economy now. They're the second largest economy in the world, just slightly behind the United States. I shouldn't say slightly; they're still well behind us. But they have been catching up. But I don't think their model is right. I like the American model where we have, you know, entrepreneurship. We don't have government. Too often we have government directing investment, but not nearly as much as some of these other countries. And that model works. The model of government deciding where to invest and what industries of the future they are going to put their money behind, it's never worked. I mean, it didn't work for the Soviet Union. It's not going to work for China.
All right. He is Steve Moore, chief economist for CNN. Steve.
And it's not Jimmy T.
Well, you're often confused. You two, you're like his doppelganger.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a great day, guys. Bye.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy talking about the rescue efforts underway for that soccer team stranded in Thailand. Our very own senior senator, Sack Durbin.
Oh, my God.
He commented on it, Meet the Press, over the weekend.
Hearts and prayers are with those boys in Thailand trapped in that cave. I hope our hearts and prayers are also with thousands of children, toddlers and infants removed from their parents by the Trump administration under zero tolerance. They're trapped in a bureaucratic cave, too. So let's not forget them.
Oh, my. How irresponsible of him to compare the two. There is,
They're in a metaphorical
cave. Oh, yeah.
Cave.
But the kids that are trapped are scared. They're weak. They miss their parents. And it's going to be an arduous task to get them out. And they've rescued the sixth and seventh boy. CNN's reporting, other outlets are reporting, but it is amazing. It's a 3 miles long, and the person that's rescuing them, they're master divers, and they strap on 2 boys to each expert diver. But it's a long journey to get
out. Same thing that was going on at Ohio State, apparently.
Oh, hey.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
I'm reliving the same day over and over.
Dan and Amy, that's what we've been doing in Chicago for the entire adult lives of Jesse Jackson Sr. and Father Michael Flager, which we did again on Saturday with their Shut Down the Dan Ryan protests. And make no mistake about it, they came, they saw, they shut down.
It will be shut down! It will be shut down!
And so it was.
Yeah, well, they were supposed to originally have one lane. That was the plan. One lane, about a mile and a half between 79th and 67th on the inbound Dan Ryan. But they wanted more, and they got more. They closed down all 5 lanes of traffic because Mayor Emanuel, Superintendent Johnson, caved. And Illinois State Police, we had to spend our tax dollars, you know, with hundreds of police officers plus Illinois State Police and IDOT had to use their trucks to stop traffic. Literally, it was a standstill, a parking lot on the Dan Ryan, so much so that even people that were stranded or stuck got out of their cars to watch the protest.
Yeah, so you had a march.
Yeah, then that's, you know.
And you had chanting.
Yeah.
And
they have a right to assemble, but not on my expressway.
You had a march, and you had your chanting, and you had specialty T-shirts.
Oh.
You had it all. And then after the march was over,
everything was fine, right?
You had 5 dead and 35 wounded this weekend.
35 people shot.
Mm.
5 fatally shot.
So you can't end violence by saying you're for peace. And you can't end violence by demanding more of what we've done in the South and West Sides, which is just pour government money and extend government control over the every aspect of the lives of the residents of those neighborhoods. And apparently, per the organizers there, you can't fall into the trap that the honkies want you to fall into.
The what?
The honkies. Which is to incarcerate violent criminals. Not going to fall for that. Not Father Flager, not Jesse Jackson Sr. Good piece in City Journal on the topic. Makes the point about incarceration. Give you a couple of examples. The real problem, Chicago consistently fails to incapacitate its criminal class. When the cops catch a bad guy, the city often lets him right out. For instance, June 27th, Chicago police arrest Cortez Byrd, a felon, for, among other things, unlawfully using a weapon. But look into the city's arrest database shows that Byrd, just 19 years old, was arrested a year earlier for aggravated use of a loaded firearm. On the same date, June 27th, CPD arrested Joseph Ryan on a gun charge. Ryan's record shows 6 prior arrests and charges ranging from possession of a stolen vehicle to drugs to property destruction to being a fugitive from justice. In April, the CPD posted photos on Facebook of drugs and several firearms recovered during the arrest of Kendrell McCurry. 12 days later, McCurry was arrested for dealing cannabis. He was arrested yet again 2 weeks afterward on the same charge. McCurry's record shows 7 arrests since 2014, 2 for gun possession. And yet, what do we hear from Flager and Jackson and their fellow travelers, if it's not demands for more gun control and prosecution of people who commit crimes with guns, that's not happening, then it's more money from the government to particular neighborhoods, and that has been happening to no great effect.
Well, they have a plan.
We need an aggressive plan. If there's not an aggressive plan to help equalize the South and the West Side to the North Side, then we'll get ready for another civil disobedience.
I say Father Flager for mayor. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Why should he just do what he was doing on Saturday, flack for Tiny Dancer? Why flack for him? Be the guy yourself. Take the helm, Michael Flager. Chicago deserves you. Frank in Sarasota, Florida, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Amy. How you doing?
Hello.
Yeah, I'm not in Sarasota right now, but I'm in Illinois.
Okay. We're not tracking.
But whatever.
Two homes.
Pardon me?
No,
you
go
have
ahead.
Two homes, yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
As far as the shutdown of the Dan Ryan, I was really disappointed in John Cass's column. I believe it was on Friday, where he, said that Flagler was doing the right thing. But anyway, and that, as far as that goes, jobs and economic opportunity doesn't stop the gangbanging. You know, if they're worried about guns, as far as I'm concerned, there was a bill, I believe, in the Springfield a year or so ago, and that bill was to give stiffer penalties for crimes committed with guns. And the Black Caucus in Illinois had that squashed. I didn't hear one word from Flagler about that.
Well, that's right. Thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, that's exactly the problem. And we just, from this piece in the City Journal, cited a couple of recent cases of the multiple individuals who have been arrested multiple times, a range of crimes, including gun-related crimes. And it's just turnstile justice in Chicago and Cook County. And it's even more so if you talk to anybody who knows, whether it's in CPD or the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, it's even more so with Kim Fox, because Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle protege, is one of these left-wing SJWs who wants to open the jails. You know, criminal justice reform and a path for ex-offenders after they've served a legitimate sentence for their crimes, that is not mutually exclusive to punishing people for said crimes. You can find ways for ex-offenders to reenter society. We've done it at Illinois Policy Institute, has done it through things like licensing reform. Somebody's proven up, they've served their sentence, they've proven up that they're going to be an upstanding citizen. And why should there be these artificial barriers to be like a hairstylist or to be an entrepreneur in some other discipline? There are ways to facilitate the reentry of ex-offenders into civil society for those that don't want to be repeat offenders. But here we just have the hands being thrown up. So that results in police not making stops, because what's the point? I don't have the backing of not only the civilian political authorities, but the other side of the criminal justice system, the prosecutor's offices. And you have case after case after case of this where, and this happens not just the prosecutor, but the judges as well, not imposing sentences, prosecutors pleading people out for lesser included charges that don't involve jail time or involve less jail time than there should be. And so you have this criminal class that's completely unaccountable. And so Flagler and Jackson flack for a criminal class that preys on their defined constituents at the same time as they advocate for policies that have destroyed these neighborhoods and done nothing in furtherance of public safety or economic opportunity.
Well, and speaking of public safety, they're going to do this again, and they're also going to take pen to paper.
No, we got their attention. Okay. Today we got their attention, and hopefully they saw the masses of people who got their attention. The next thing is the goal. Our young people sent letters to the governor and the mayor and all the candidates running for mayor and governor and said, sit down with us. We have ideas what you need to do. You tell us what you're going to do. We need an aggressive plan. If there's not an aggressive plan to help equalize the south and the west side to the north side, then we'll get ready for another civil disobedience.
It's Groundhog Day! Get up and sit that hog out there!
Yeah. I'm reliving the same day over and over.
I mean, honestly, but we got their attention. That's all that Flagler and Jackson ever do. 1,000 people in Dan Ryan, big deal. There are 15,000 people at Daily Plaza protesting our immigration laws. So what? I mean, yeah, okay, it's a spectacle. It's something for the Chicago Press Corps to cover.
Well, and national networks covered it too.
Whatever. Chicago Press Corps is just an extension of the D.C. Press Corps. So what? Big deal.
Well, what's next? The Kennedy? Maybe the Junction?
Chicago River, the airspace over O'Hare. Dan in Libertyville.
Good morning. Yeah, Father Flagler is really a unique case. If you were to research, he used to protest outside Chuck's gun shop down in like Riverdale.
Yeah, that's right.
And he chanted out to snuff out Chuck. So when you got a Catholic priest talking to his parish about killing an innocent man who's doing nothing more than conducting business, it's pretty hard to take him serious. Now, we have 100,000 gang members, according to the FBI and the Illinois Crime Commission, 50 gangs in Chicago. Cook County Jail's full. They have nowhere to lock these people up. That's why it's turn them in and turn them out. We have a system in which we have more criminals than we have cops or jail cells to lock them up, and it does become a hands-up kind of thing, because what the hell are you going to do with them?
Yeah, that's not, except, thanks for the call, Dan, except when you're talking about violent criminals, repeat violent offenders, it's a much smaller number. And Eddie Johnson, he's even made mention of it, 1,500 people that we know are likely to kill or be killed. And I'm not saying that's the limit of it, but I'm also not talking about warehousing every 12-year-old who's a member of the Latin Kings. I'm talking about violent criminals. And also
they
police,
know where they are.
And also police presence in these neighborhoods. And police empowerment in these neighborhoods to have their authority respected. You talk to police officers again, and they will tell you because they don't have the backing, the civilian political authorities, the gangbangers know that these are not unsophisticated people, and they know they've got the run of the place. Big cultural difference. Rick on the west side.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. Listen, you know, it's frustrating that these politicians can do whatever they want to do, you know? One example would be the Dan Ryan's interstate highway. And if they shut that down, there's a law impeding commerce. I'm surprised that nobody mentioned this. You know, you got a lot of trucks traveling on that highway with perishable goods on it. They can't afford to be tied up for a couple hours
it's
like that.
It's one of the country's busiest expressways.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Yeah, so now will they do permitting for other groups that want to assemble on the Dan Ryan or one of the expressways? Can we get permits for that?
Well, I mean, if it's a group that's, you know, part of their constituency.
Why not?
For Mayor Emanuel, I'm sure he'll just let them do whatever they want.
The expressways are public places for demonstrations like Daley Plaza.
And I understand why they were protesting. We all get that. It's not that we're not compassionate. But to inconvenience thousands of people, it's ridiculous.
They're more against violence than you are.
Well, there was a plan in place. And Governor Rauner even, you know, took Mayor Emanuel to task for it, saying, I'm disappointed tweeting this, and the mayor, there was an agreement. I'm calling on the mayor to take swift and decisive action to put an end to this kind of chaos.
Yeah. Politicians arguing about the logistics of this spectacle. There's people with their eye on the prize. Yeah. There's people serious about interdicting violence. Greg in Northlake.
Good morning, guys. Love the show. Hey, I think we learned in the last election cycle that words matter, I think. I think we got to pay attention to what he actually said. He said he wants to equalize the South and West Side. He didn't say he wants to raise them up. I think somebody needs to challenge him to define exactly what he means by equalize, because the policy of this state is just focused on bringing the rest of us down.
Well, thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, equalize, we'd actually be taking money out of those neighborhoods relative to the money that's spent by government in those neighborhoods. Think of the school systems, policing, et cetera. We'd actually be taking money out if you want to equalize it. But of course, that's not what he's talking about. I think, though, I'm serious. Flager should run for mayor. He should be the mayor. Should install him. If nothing else, and there's nothing else that he offers, he exposes the abject cowardice of C-suiteers and the self-styled civic leaders on the lakefront and the wannabe tough guy Pauls like Tiny Dancer. He exposes them all. And that's what this weekend did yet again. And they're all in the scam. I mean, he's just another thief in the den, is Flager. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. Yet another Flager stunt. Maybe if he wore big shoes and a rubber nose, you know. Maybe
jumped over
the clown
buses
that he
or something.
Is in front of that. You know, I think it's unfortunate that Rahm Emanuel is in on all of the silliness, but are we surprised? Maybe for the next stunt, I'm hoping that Flager listens. Is maybe to get into O'Hare, and why not line up a couple thousand people across a couple of runways, see how far he gets on that. Because I think with the Illinois State Police opposing the Chicago police, who are taking their marching orders from the little puke in City Hall, Rahm. And the Chicago police acquiescing to Rahm and saying, well, you know, we support peaceful protest as well. You know, when's the last time blocking interstate highways, peaceful protest? Try that at O'Hare and see how far they get. See how far inside the fence they get.
Thanks, Ralph.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Matt and Oak Lawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Question I have is, the liability of the Archdiocese with this charade on Saturday? And I actually called the Cardinal Saturday morning, and I just expressed some displeasure in a voicemail, of course, about what if someone gets hit by a car and sues the Archdiocese for millions of dollars? Is that the money that my wife and I give to the church on Sunday morning? We're not going to give money to cover that lawsuit. Just an utter frustration when he comes out and tells them to be bold and undaunted. Curious what your thoughts on that are, Dan.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of what Cardinal Supich had to say on the topic. And it's interesting, too, all of his fellow travelers on the left, Supich saying he applauds the courage shown by young people in our city across the country demanding their right to life and human dignity given by God, guaranteed by our nation's founders. They make us proud. They give us hope and so on and so forth. Maybe you could invite Father Flager and all of those folks and all of his leftist political friends to a private screening of that new Gosnell movie, since he's so focused on the right to life, is Cardinal Supich. Thanks for the call, Matt. And also, too, the financing you talked about.
Because the buses that were rented to bring the protesters there.
And just the public resources that were devoted to ensuring the safety of motorists and protesters alike.
Yeah, Chicago police officers. I know that some were on furlough, they got called back in.
By the way,
all the IDOT workers, you know, we had to use their trucks to keep, you know, the cars off or to make sure that they didn't hit the people. And it was a lot of tax dollar burdens going on Saturday.
And just speaking of public safety, a good gal with a gun story. Mm-hmm. Did you see this? Man at a Milwaukee George Webb restaurant. He's upset with the waitress because his order is taking too long. He walks back into the kitchen. He cold cocks the woman, punches her in the face.
Hit the cook, not the waitress. But yeah, okay, go on.
Thanks for it's good advice. Another waitress standing right behind her had concealed carry.
Yeah,
she pulls out a gun from her waistband and and ends that confrontation. He leaves the restaurant. Police are now looking for him. He's a known drug dealer in Milwaukee.
And he was hangry that day.
Good gal with a gun story.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
That's a little country music courtesy of Randy Weaver, who's going to be performing at the Rockin' for the Troops concert this Saturday, July 14th.
Yes, Ryan Weaver, I can't wait.
Northwestern Medicine Field, that's where the Kane County Cougars play, of course, in Geneva, Illinois, part of the lineup that includes Ayla Brown and others. This is in support of Operation Support Our Troops, a nonprofit that supports military families that we here at AM 560 have been affiliated with, partnered with on a number of events because they do such great work. And Ryan Weaver's got a really compelling story in particular on this topic. Ryan Weaver and his family have given a lot to this country. He is a member of a Gold Star family who has served our country in the military. And I'll let him tell his story and talk about his music as well, because we're pleased to have Ryan Weaver joining us now. Ryan, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning from Nashville, Tennessee. How are y'all doing?
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
there.
Bragger.
The epicenter of country music. Where else would you be? There you go.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to having you in town on Saturday, but people should know your backstory in addition to your music. And so just a little bit of your family's military service to this country.
Well, I am four brothers that flew helicopters in the Army. I was a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. I had two brothers that were Kiowa helicopter pilots, and my brother-in-law was a Black Hawk helicopter pilot as well. And Aaron, one of my brothers, my actually only full-blood brother, and I were deployed to Iraq in 2003/2004, and on January 8th of 2004, he was killed in the back of a medevac helicopter that was shot down. And then my brother-in-law, Randy, was killed in 2013 on December 17th when the Black Hawk he was piloting was shot down in Afghanistan. And, I mean, essentially when I, you know, in the 2004 when I was deployed there and all that happened, I realized life was passing me by. So I decided to start chasing this dream of country music. I had actually done some singing and karaoke competitions prior to that and was winning and was writing in Iraq as well. I started going after this, and it's been an incredible journey so far.
Now, what's your musical background?
I honestly started doing singing competitions and karaoke competitions in flight school in 2000. Wow. And I realized it was something that I could actually do and that I loved, and I was winning. I don't have your typical country music story that I started playing country music when I was 3 years old and picked up a guitar and doing all that. I really didn't. I'd sang in plays and those kind of things and, that did performances back when I was a kid, but I didn't really realize it was something that I could do until later on in life. And once I started winning those competitions and helping pay bills while I was going through flight school, I really started loving it. It was incredible.
And was your big break, as it were, associated with professional bull riding?
I've actually had a couple big breaks. I started working with the Charlie Daniels Camp back in 2014 when Crank It, the song you just heard, the music video is out on national television on the Heartland Network. And now it was the Nashville Network turned Heartland Network and on Zeus Country, and all self-funded, all self-done, no record label, no management, no nothing. But the Charlie Daniels Camp brought me on for a little bit, and I got to perform at the Ryman Auditorium there at Bridgestone Arena on the Grand Ole Opry in 2015. And then we released a music video called Burn, to my song called Burn, to national television. I had Chris Peranto and John Tigan, that's Tonto and Tig from 13 Hours, two of the survivors from Benghazi. And then Paramount gave us authorization to use movie trailer clips in the video, and that was out on national television as well. Mm-hmm. And I was performing a show out in Colorado, a veterans event in Colorado, and the CEO of the PBR was in the front row and the sponsor of it, and came up, gave me a business card and said, "Hey, we got some things going on. I work with the PBR." Didn't really tell me who he was. And we had a bunch of folks that I was talking to at the same time, and I went back to my bus and saw there was a CEO, and then he signed me on as the patriotic voice of the PBR in 2017. I replaced Steven Tyler as the headliner at the World Finals in T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, which was an incredible experience for me to sing to my first sold-out arena and have them sing a song that they didn't know, but I taught it to them at the beginning, and they were all singing it back to me. And this year we started off in Madison Square Garden, and I've been performing at all the arenas around with them this year. It's been incredible.
That's great.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, we say PBR, we think Pabst Blue Ribbon. But
right.
Yeah. But okay.
Right.
All right.
Now, your brother Aaron, who died, tell us about him for those of us who don't know him.
Well, Aaron was he was in the actual ambush in Mogadishu that Black Hawk Down was portrayed after. He was one of the Rangers on the ground. He's interviewed in the History Channel interviews when they talk about the making of Black Hawk Down. He was an American superhero. He was a cancer survivor. Mm. He was non-deployable and got a waiver to be deployed, go to Iraq, and he had to get bi-monthly blood screenings in accordance with that waiver, and he was on his way to one of those bi-monthly blood screenings in the back of a medevac helicopter when it was shot down and everybody on board was killed. And, he's been my inspiration. I wear his dog tags. Folks that come out to the show will see him wearing his honor tags. And along with my oldest brother, Steve, who is actually currently deployed with a civilian company flying helicopters for the government. But and then Randy's, and they're all back-to-back because we've got each other's backs. But I followed in his footsteps my entire military career, with exception of going to the Ranger Regiment because I loved to eat and sleep, and I wasn't as hardcore as he was. I went military intelligence prior to flight school. But, he's been my inspiration, and I've been driving since, and, I don't –
we've got so many huge things that are on the horizon for next year already. And had I not had him in my corner, I don't know where I would be as far as the desire to keep going in the country music business, because it's a tough business. But I love every second of the ride, and having him in my corner is an absolute inspiration.
So we know he's your inspiration on a personal level, military level. What about country music? Who are the country music stars you grew up listening to that you, maybe try and emulate in some way?
So when folks come out to see the show, there's an awesome lineup here for this one, and it's called Rockin' for the Troops. And my show is 80s. My country music is 80s rock infused with country music.
Ooh.
Because I grew up listening to Bon Jovi,
sure,
Def Leppard, Guns N' Roses, Metallica. I grew up listening to that stuff. And I really started listening to country music in the 90s when Garth Brooks was getting huge. I don't know if you remember when he sold out Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City back to back to back. I think it was 10 shows back in the 90s. As soon as the tickets went on sale, he just kept selling it out. And he said, I'm just going to keep selling tickets at the arena or the stadium until they don't sell out a show. And I think he sold 10 shows out before he stopped selling. But Garth Brooks is a huge inspiration as far as his performances are concerned. Travis Tritt, one of the best vocalists I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
He's absolutely incredible. I mean, and Charlie Daniels being his age, doing what he does, a lot of folks don't realize, if they have never seen a Charlie Daniels show, he's an incredible entertainer. But he's also one of the best huggers you're ever going to find.
That's good to know.
Are you handing out hugs too?
I'd love a hug from Charlie Daniels. There's no question.
Or Ryan Weaver.
And by the way, just don't make the Garth Brooks mistake of doing that alter ego Chris Gaines thing. You don't want to do that.
There are a couple artists. There are a couple artists that are out there doing that. And I got to be honest with you. For me, it's the best thing about the PBR bringing me on board. I didn't have to change who I am. I didn't have to change my music. They signed me to a single song album record deal with them. I didn't have to change my look. I did change my cowboy hat. I went to a little bit more of a traditional cowboy hat, but okay. Larry Mahan, one of the most famous cowboys of all time, gave me one of his hats. So I was happy about that, but that's the only thing I had to change about me, really. And, it's been, when folks come out to watch the show, they're going to see a genuine, hopefully by the time that they get done watching the show, they'll think that, hey, I could be up there doing that, if they have a dream to go after it. Because like I said, I don't have a typical story in country music by any stretch of the imagination. So
yeah, but you have an amazing story though too.
Do you get free bull rides? Do you get to ride the bulls too or no?
I do a lot of the PR ahead of time for these events, and they pair me up with a bull rider. I'm telling you right now, they get folks like you to get on those bulls in the chutes. I won't do it. I spent enough dangerous time in a Black Hawk. That
baby,
was good for me.
Baby.
But I see.
You're me too, man.
Man, I'm going to tell you, you can say whatever you want to. All it takes is those 2,000-pound bull just deciding it doesn't want me there.
Oh, that's fun.
And,
If Luke,
those are good times.
If Luke Perry can do it, you can do it. Come on. maybe a little Hollywood magic. All right, he is Ryan Weaver, rocking for the Troops concert this Saturday, July 14th, this Saturday, Northwestern Medicine Field, where the Kane County Cougars play. It's a great concert venue in addition to ballpark. And we'll have more information all week and ticket giveaways so that you can see Ryan Weaver in the full lineup on Saturday. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for your service and your family's service to our country, and we'll see you Saturday.
I really appreciate it. And everybody can check out my Facebook page at Ryan Weaver Country, or go to weavercountry.com and get all my socials.
Great. Weavercountry.com. Thanks, Ryan.
And Ryan joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. There's a lot of strange people in positions of power the world over. One of them is Rodrigo Duterte, who's the president of the Philippines now.
Is he still executing people who are drug dealers?
Yes.
Or has he calmed down a little?
It's been described that there have been a lot of suspects that have been killed in clashes with police. Also Duterte on site for some of those clashes and ordering said executions. Yeah. Problematic. Philippines is a very Catholic country.
It is, but then there's Muslims in certain islands. There's a lot of Muslims in the Philippines.
Okay, but generally speaking, it's a very Catholic country. And so it's a curious thing that Duterte did in a speech during the opening of a science and technology event in a southern city there. Where is the logic of God there? He questioned the basic tenets of Catholicism, including the concept of original sin. And then he went on to say, if there's one single witness who can prove the existence of God, who's able to talk and to see God, he will immediately resign his office. So, okay, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Anselm, you're up. Yeah. And Manny Pacquiao can't come soon enough.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and this is just a bizarre case. We've covered it intermittently over the last year or so, but this is the case of Imran Awan, who's a former systems administrator for Todd Christensen, a.k.a. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and many other Democrats on the Hill. He was arrested last year, about this time last year, when he tried to leave the country, ostensibly to return to Pakistan.
Oh, that's right.
He was taken into custody at Dulles Airport.
Didn't he have bags of cash on him or a suitcase full of cash?
Well, he had pled guilty to bank fraud involving withdrawing hundreds of thousands of dollars by lying on mortgage application, pretending to have medical emergency. And then he wired the money to Pakistan in January. He wasn't picked up until July when he tried to flee. But there's all kinds of other issues with his time as a IT guy for Wasserman Schultz and many other Democrats on the Hill that include unauthorized accessing of members of Congress, of the computers of members of Congress, and ultimately the files. And you have somebody who is sent family over to Pakistan and was in the process of fleeing there himself. So this has sort of been chalked up as a guy who was the caricature from the D.C. press corps. There's a guy who's like kind of money hungry and was trying to manipulate people in the system just to enrich himself. But obviously, if you're accessing records, you're not entitled to access. You're talking about members of Congress, very security clearances. The exposure is potentially much more significant. And yet last week, Jeff Sessions, his Department of Justice, President Trump's Department of Justice gave Awan a walk.
What?
And we need to understand why that might be. The person who's probably covered this with the most painstaking detail, even where the D.C. press corps has assiduously attempted to pay no mind, is Luke Rosiak from the Daily Caller, dailycaller.com. And Luke joins us now. Luke, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
In your latest piece on the topic, reporting on this pass that Awan is getting from DOJ, you break it down nicely in terms of kind of the two categories of issues. One, cybersecurity issues, and then secondly, theft-related issues. Why don't we start with the cybersecurity issues and just kind of lay it out for us?
Sure. So this guy started working for Wasserman Schultz around 10 years ago, and there's a limit to how much a congressional employee can make. I mean, a staffer can't make more than a member. So it seemed like he was making way more than any other IT guy. He's making like $165,000 a year. And then after that, he started adding his entire family to the payroll, which seemed to be a way to circumvent that cap. So before you know it, you've got these six Pakistani guys plus one of their Ukrainian wives. They got all the access to all the files and emails of one in five House Democrats because of their position as systems administrators. And what they start doing is they log into other people's offices who they don't even work for. And some of these members fire these guys because they notice problems. Well, guess what? These guys started logging into the people's servers who had just fired them. They're taking data off the House network. They're violating, all the kind of basic IT protocols that you would have, not only in Congress, but even things that any prudent IT person that any small business would do. Basically, it's like the Wild West. I mean, they're logging in all kinds of places. You got data flying everywhere. And all this is going on Capitol Hill. It would blow people's minds, I think, to see how little it was sort of overseen and regulated. And when you look into these guys' backgrounds, not only were they breaking the rules and taking data off the house network, these are guys that have been in a lot of trouble in their lives. I mean, out of the brothers, there's three brothers and then a bunch of other relatives. They've got a bunch of criminal convictions. They're Pakistani citizens. They've been repeatedly accused of extortion and blackmail-like behavior in the past, which is obviously what you would be concerned about with people who had access to all this information. They're doing very strange things in Pakistan, sending all kinds of money over there. And they've got this business over in Pakistan, which has also been accused of fraud by all kinds of people. And this guy, Imran Awan, travels with an armed motorcade of government agents in Pakistan. And that's something that hasn't been explained by anyone. So Jeff Sessions, as he said, looked into it and basically gave this guy immunity and said, we've looked into it. We found he didn't do anything wrong in Congress, so we're not going to charge him with anything. And there's just so many unanswered questions here, including why the heck does this guy have an armed motorcade of Pakistani agents?
Well, it still blows my mind that he was able to strike a deal with the Department of Justice. But where is he now? Does he live in Pakistan still? And does he still have armed security guards with him?
Well, so he lives in Virginia, and you know he had basically spent a couple months out of every year in Pakistan, and that's when he would have that protection detail. But he would work from Pakistan, logging in and administering congressional servers. And his former business partner claimed that he gave data to Pakistan. I mean, that hasn't been that's the direct on-the-record claim by this guy that knows him really well. So a lot of people hate this guy. They've been double-crossed by him. They think he'll do anything for money. Some of my sources are his relatives who came to me and said, my God, this guy is an urgent threat. This guy would sell his own mom for a penny. So that's the kind of guy, that's why I started following this very closely since over a year ago. People are very, very concerned about this guy, that he would stop at nothing to get money.
How did his family members, I mean, you're describing their history of run-ins with the law. How do they pass background checks in the first place to be a contractor or an employee of the federal government for members of Congress?
Well, that's one of the interesting things, is that background checks are required, as you would imagine, on Capitol Hill. But all 44 members of Congress, they were all Democrats, they all exempted these guys. Now, if you were going to, you shouldn't exempt anyone, but if you're going to exempt someone, I mean, certainly not Pakistani citizens with no credentials, which I didn't even mention. Imran Awan had IT training. The rest of them didn't even have any experience in IT. So that's something that the Democrats haven't explained. I basically reported months ago that they had all exempted them from background checks, and the Democrats refused to address it. And then a few months later, that was confirmed in a hearing in Congress, where now they're talking about, changing those policies and making sure that they can't do that anymore. But the thing is, they were never supposed to do so in the first place.
How in the world did Debbie Wasserman Schultz get, hire this guy?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and they have an extraordinarily close relationship. They hang out together. Wasserman Schultz's daughter, Imran Awan, has a horse, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz basically brought her daughter over on a regular basis to ride his horse. Apparently Debbie Wasserman Schultz actually chose the name of Imran Awan's daughter. So they're like, they had this, and she gave him a Jewish name. It's just like this incredibly close relationship in a way that's not at all normal. And this guy, again, I mean, he had full reign of the place. He had access to everything. They weren't monitoring him. And so the inspector general found that, basically you mentioned that there's two things. There's theft and then hacking. It's kind of like how they got Al Capone for, tax issues, except I'm not trying to minimize the theft, because a theft scheme in Congress is a big deal. Basically, these guys were in charge of ordering hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment, and they were falsifying financial records
invoices.
In ways that made the equipment disappear. Basically, they made everything appear as petty cash, so then it wasn't tracked. And some Democrats said a couple years ago that, you know, we think we've uncovered a theft scheme. Yvette Clark from New York, Congresswoman from New York, she had a tenth of her annual budget disappear. So people had been raising the red flags about this guy for a long time and saying, my God, they're stealing from Congress.
Well,
and that triggered a review that eventually found those cybersecurity issues as well.
Well, if Wasserman Schultz and this Awan guy had such a close relationship, then why does he leave her laptop in a phone booth, I didn't even know they still existed, on Capitol Hill that was ultimately taken by police, and then Wasserman Schultz had that famous or infamous interaction with the Capitol Hill police chief where she was demanding her laptop be returned.
Yeah, that's what you got. I mean, she may like him or may have liked him a few years ago, but you got to wonder whether he actually likes her or whether he's using these people.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, after he got caught during the election, and it's interesting because during the election, kind of at the heat of the election between Trump and Clinton, this was going on. There was a massive cybersecurity and sort of Democratic theft / corruption investigation going on Capitol Hill. And they worked very hard to make sure this didn't come out until after the election, if at all. So they punted and they let this guy stay on the network from like July, August, September of 2016 into right after Trump's inauguration. That's kind of when they finally said, all right, they kind of said, we got something going on here. He needs to be kicked off the network. So that whole time, he had access to all this stuff, and he knew that the cops were onto him. So he started freaking out. He started wiring hundreds of thousands of dollars over to Pakistan. He tried to go to the airport with, you know, $12,000 in cash. His wife actually went to the FBI to the airport with a similar amount of cash. The FBI found the cash and let her leave anyway, which is kind of like raises questions about the FBI's handling of this case.
That's right.
But so finally, he gets kicked out of the network and he's banned from the house in February of 2017. He comes into the House Office Building at midnight, takes Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop and leaves it in the phone booth, an old, you know, it's kind of like a cubby that used to be a phone booth. And he puts a piece of paper on top that says attorney-client privilege. So the cops get it, and they realize that he left it there because he left his ID, too.
Sounds like a spy novel.
They use it as evidence. And basically it sets up a situation where he's got all the access. It's kind of, to me, it seemed like a warning shot. You know, I've got your stuff. Don't think I won't release it. So that triggered Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop to be in the hands of the DOJ and to be evidence in this case. But it couldn't quite be looked at because of this attorney-client privilege note. And that's when Debbie Wasserman Schultz threatened the Capitol Police with consequences if he didn't give back the evidence in this case.
But he's not her attorney or an attorney, right?
Correct. I mean, he had actually a former Hillary Clinton aide was his attorney. And a very, very aggressive guy. And he really worked through the media to kind of, spin this thing.
I can understand why Democrats would want to bury this because it's so embarrassing and who knows what compromising information he has. Why would Jeff Sessions and Department of Justice take a pass on this guy?
Yeah, that's the key question here is, I mean, one can only speculate. I mean, it's the deep state, you know, it's some of these same issues we've seen with the handling of, you know, the Hillary Clinton investigation and how they kind of knew that some things happened there and they chose not to charge. We're seeing similar things here. So it's kind of like, is it just that the FBI has a lot of partisans in it and Jeff Sessions isn't getting the message, or is Jeff Sessions afraid to anger 44 Democrats because they obviously would have been furious? Does he just not have the backbone? But what's clear is that when they put out the statement saying we looked into it and we didn't find anything wrong, that's not true. The evidence is there, and I don't even think it's that. I think I do know more about this case than the FBI, but I think the FBI is aware of massive evidence, and they didn't prosecute anyway. So that's something that hasn't been explained. And it's even that you can get these guys on paper. There are elements of this case that can be proven by a first-year law student. For example, you have to fill out these ethics disclosures in the House saying, do you have any conflicts of interest? Do you have any outside income? Well, these guys were running, they had a dozen LLCs, and no one will say what these LLCs did. One of them was a car dealership, a purported car dealership called CIA. and it took $100,000 from an Iraqi government minister. So it seems to be a money laundering vessel to take money from, yeah, from foreign governments.
You're right.
And they didn't disclose this. So that's a felony right there. But somehow Jeff Sessions couldn't or wouldn't prove it.
You're right. This is like a John le Carre
Maybe
spy
there's
novel.
Something about him on that computer.
Well, Luke Rosiak, investigative reporter for DailyCaller.com. Great reporting. Thank you for joining us and helping to break this down for us. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
I'm sure a movie about it will be out soon, right? Thanks. And he joined us on our Turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Real quickly, did you hear about JetBlue, the flight attendants? They are heroes and should be receiving honor from President Trump. They saved
that?
A bulldog. There was a French bulldog named Darcy who was a service dog. I can't imagine anybody doing that. On a JetBlue flight from Florida to Massachusetts, and their owners noticed that Darcy was panting heavily, lips turned blue, tongue turned blue, and the two flight attendants jumped into action, provided an oxygen tank. So they put the little mask around Darcy. You got to see it. It's so cute. And then Darcy perked up right away, and Darcy's fine in case you care. But pugs, bulldogs, you can't check them underneath, and sometimes it's a little precarious to have them with you on board because of the breathing problem.
Yeah. Because they're going the way of the dodo bird. Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Do we have another Penn State, another Michigan State at Ohio State? And this one potentially involving Congressman Jim Jordan. The story that broke over the holiday weekend is about Dr. Jelly Paws, as Richard Strauss was known by some former wrestlers at Ohio State University. Seven former athletes, former nursing students sharing details of alleged sexual misconduct dating back to the 70s against the doctor who killed himself in 2005. And is now only under investigation, describing how they were fondled by him during medical exams, how he ogled naked young men, sometimes showering with athletes multiple times a day for no apparent reason.
All right. When the doctor is showering with the student athletes, that's when you need to say something. But yeah, apparently he'd be in the shower for hours, Dan, with different athletes and, you know, doing the towel game and just being wildly inappropriate.
There are reports that the coach at the time, Russ Hellickson, told the doctor to stop his unbecoming, at minimum, behavior. Other wrestlers said that the coach also expressed concerns to a residential hall administrator about voyeurism at the recreation and training center, where they said Strauss and other older male faculty members, university employees, would go to leer at the athletes in the locker room, showers, and sauna. It's like the Chicago public school system. Hellickson, the coach, said in a statement he never ignored abusive wrestlers. He and former assistant coach Jim Jordan, who was there from 86 to 94, was asked about what he knew and when he knew it, if he saw anything, if he failed to address concerns that were raised, allegations that were lodged, as some former wrestlers are accusing him, and he was on Fox on Friday denying it.
It's false. I mean, I never saw, never heard of, never was told about any type of abuse. If I had been, I would have dealt with it. Our coaching staff, we would have dealt with it. These were our student athletes. A good coach puts the interests of his student athletes first. We would have dealt with it if we'd have known about anything that happened. If, in fact, there are victims, they deserve justice. There's an investigation going on. We're going to, I think, meet with them next week. We want the investigation to get to the truth. That's what we need here is the truth.
So there's a couple of wrestlers making accusations that Jordan didn't respond to allegations, and others that are defending Jordan, although they also, according to the AP, acknowledge a culture of inappropriate activity by outsiders.
Well, there's
at that residential hall, yeah, I mentioned.
There's seven former wrestlers who said he knew, including this guy, DeSabato. He was on CNN three times the other day.
I know Jim knew about the what I call the deviant sexual atmosphere that we were exposed to.
How do you know?
Well, we all had conversations. Jim was more like a big brother than a coach. It was something that we would discuss on a regular basis, mainly with nervous banter, locker room banter.
Yeah. Mm. Both DeSabato and this this other guy, Dinasha Yates, you know, there's some questions about their general integrity. Sure. Dinasha Yates served prison time for a $1.8 million fraud scheme. And DeSabato is currently being accused by a widow of a Marine killed in combat in Iraq of intimidating and bullying her over a memorial fund set up in her husband's name. He also
has some beef with Ohio State University, too.
He was sued for defamation and libel. So, I mean, I'm
so
not
a shady character.
Yeah, well, but there's questions about them. I'll say that
Jim Jordan, the congressman, has taken it one step further. He actually thinks that this might be a conspiracy against him.
You'd have to ask them. I think the timing is suspect from when you think about how this whole story came together after the Rosenstein interview or hearing with this whole talk about the speaker's race. But it is just not accurate. And as I said before, there's conversations in the locker room are a lot different than someone coming up to you and saying there was some kind of abuse. If there had been that, we would have dealt with it. Coach Hellickson would have dealt with it. Our entire coaching staff, we had five coaches, we'd have dealt with it.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State, this is under investigation. More than 150 former athletes and witnesses have been interviewed by so far, says the college. And the school has urged anyone with information to come forward and contact the investigators from Perkins Coie, the law firm they hired to handle this matter. So we'll see how this plays out. But of course, against the backdrop of Penn State and Michigan State, against the backdrop of Denny Hastert.
Oh yeah.
You know, you look.
Should we ban wrestling?
You look askance at some of these stories, and you know, it's, I don't know, Dr. Jellypaws.
Okay, that's disgusting.
Well, I know it is. I know it is, but I mean, if they're all acknowledging this culture of inappropriate sexual behavior, then it's kind of one of those Penn State things. You have a case of willful blindness. Is it just something like I think was the case with Joe Paterno? Like you couldn't even process what was being insinuated. It was so beyond your comprehension. I don't know. Holly and Hudson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Listen, this is completely different than Penn State. Penn State was an adult man with kids. This case at Ohio State involves adult men, 18 to 22 years old.
Yeah.
If you don't want to have your equipment fondled by Mr. Jellypaws, you transfer to another school. You kick Mr. Jellypaws and his equipment. You speak up. These are men.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to hold the women accountable and Me Too. I'm going to hold the women accountable and Me Too for the same reason. I'm going to hold these adult men responsible for their own whatever they could transfer schools, whatever they had to do, they can stop this behavior. We have to empower people, not make them victims.
Well, thanks for the call. I mean, I agree with that to some extent, but to push back a little bit, you got guys that are playing that are wrestling at the Division I level. They're worried about their wrestling careers,
yeah,
their scholarships. Right. And so do they want to make waves? Do they want to? It's embarrassing can be embarrassing to a guy to say this guy was like sexually coming on to me or sexually assaulted me or abused me in some way. So, you know, I'm not here to designate anyone as a victim, but I also see from their perspective why it's difficult to come forward with these sorts of allegations. Yeah. I don't think it's not without consequence.
This day and age, it would never happen because people would come forward and people would just think it's strange that the team doctor is showering with the players. It's gross.
Would they come forward? I mean, I don't know that that's obvious. There's still stigma attached to it. And I think you have to recognize that. You fault the predator.
And he's committed suicide, so.
Charlotte in Arlington Heights.
Hi, does the law firm Perkins and Coie ring a bell?
Yeah, it's where what's
the
his
money,
name?
The money from
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think it was the money from the Clinton campaign that went
to the dossier.
Steele dossier, yeah. To spy on Trump world.
Yeah.
Major Democrat candidates, leaders, use that same law firm, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, that's fine, but I mean, that's not the, so what? I mean, so Perkins Coie's a big firm. I mean, that they're not like conjuring up these allegations out of whole cloth against Jim Jordan.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Charlotte.
I don't know if Charlotte believes you.
Okay. Well, I'm just come on.
Mr. Prom.
Yeah, well, let's let the evidence speak for itself rather than, you know, concocting conspiracy theories. Bill in north on the north side.
Hey, good morning. I mean, someone touched me inappropriately, I'll nail him in the face. I don't understand. We're talking about wrestlers here. There's an old sicko touching them. Knock them out.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Bill. I get it, but again,
everything's on the line. I mean, that's
this isn't somebody in a bar coming up and grabbing you. This is your coach,
a doctor.
There's a doctor. This is the position of authority and some control over your life. I just think you got to be a little bit more understanding of allegations of this nature. Verlon on the south side.
Great call, Holly. I want to deal, Holly. I got her back today. I was on the wrestling team in the late 80s, early 90s before I graduated, and there's no way in H-E double hockey sticks no coach or anybody would have fondled me or anybody on the wrestling team. We would have caught them in the parking lot and dealt with them. There's no way. There's no way at all. So I want to congratulate Holly and back her up.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for the call. I mean, we know the cases where you're talking about you know, what's the difference between an 18-year-old as a senior in high school and an 18-year-old that's a freshman in college?
Not a lot of difference.
Right. And so we know cases in high school where this has happened. We've talked about the Denny Hastert matter. Ugh. He was a high school wrestling coach.
Yeah, don't remind me.
I think you have to give a little bit more bandwidth to alleged victims of this stuff. Bob in Waukegan.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd give more bandwidth. I understand where you're coming from, but I was a high school wrestler 40 years ago. I weighed 164 pounds, and I bench-pressed 285. If that doctor would have touched me, I told him I would break every finger on both hands if he ever touched me again. And if he turned me in and I lost my scholarship, I would turn him in for being a pedophile. End of discussion.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob.
You did.
Mark on the south side.
You know what? Neither one of my kids were ever abused or anything, but both of them played both high school sports and travel sports. And the high school coaches, I'm going to tell you right now, every parent knows this, they're brutal, they're vindictive, they're mean. They could sabotage a kid's career for the future. When it comes to college, they won't play them. They punish them. They have so much power over these kids that they got this. They scare the bejesus out of them, if you will, because my daughter went through it. With some of her coaches, I'll wreck your college career, and your parents can't touch me. And they have it in the rules where if your parents even approach them, it's not allowed. It's like considered assault or bullying. It's ridiculous. But that's why a lot of these kids don't come forward.
Thanks for the call, Mark. And here's the thing. Go back to the Michigan State case with that Larry Nassar.
Yeah.
You're talking about Olympic-level athletes. And even he, I mean, you know, these predators, they sort of know what they're doing in pursuit of their prey, and so they manipulate people that are otherwise world-class athletes, talented, strong, the parents of these athletes. So, you know, I mean, you're going to blame like all these were these were still some teenagers, but also adult Olympic athletes with parents involved in their athletic pursuits as well as academic pursuits at Michigan State and the like. And how many did he get away with?
That we know of.
And for
hundreds.
How long did he get away with it?
His whole career. He would even, if the parents were in the room, he would even put up towels, a stack of towels, so he could still molest the girls while the parents were in the room and not knowing. I mean, he was sick.
People underestimate, I think, how manipulative these sociopaths, these pedophiles are. That's why they're so dangerous and they belong in cages. Frank in Canaryville.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Thanks for taking my call. Obviously, this problem is systemic, and I used to teach martial art in an after-school program with CPS just recently, and their policy was that there's no way that I could be changing clothes in the same room that these kids were changing clothes in. Where was that policy 40 years ago? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for the call. Where's that policy in the last 10 years based on the Chicago Tribune expose on CPS? I mean, that's the other thing. If you want to talk about Penn State and Michigan State and now potentially Ohio State, let's talk about CPS again, too, for all those who want to score political points against Jim Jordan. Maybe we'll find out that that is deserved, particularly as he is a possible replacement for Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House if the Republicans control the House or continued leadership in the House Republican caucus. Perhaps we'll find out that he needs to be held accountable, too. I'm open-minded on the topic. I'm not open-minded about the lack of coverage or interest in CPS. What about that? Lee and Hammond.
Yeah, hi. You know, I'm really getting sick of this double standard that goes on in the mainstream media with wall-to-wall coverage of this Jordan case. Now, in the meantime, like the Iwan brothers, that kind of thing's just swept right under the rug. I mean, to me, the biggest scandal in this whole country is what's going on in with our double-faced government and their media and the collusion that's going on in, within the deep state between those two organizations to just blow smoke up to the American people. It's sickening already.
All right. Thanks for the call, Lee.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
So tonight, in prime time, President Trump announces his SCOTUS pick. And
are you having a viewing party at your pie in the sky?
I'm not, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it because of the great work that Leonard Leo at the Federalist Society has done in putting together the list that the president has used since he was a candidate and that he stuck to as president, and good for him. And this is why infrastructure building is so important, because it sets up an opportunity when you get the right leadership. Leonard Leo explaining what the Federalist Society does.
My goal, first and foremost, has always been to find people to serve on the court who believe in the Constitution as it's written. And that's really ultimately what drives the conservative legal movement. You want judges on the court who understand that the best way to preserve freedom and dignity and prosperity in this country is to have people who are going to interpret the Constitution as it's written and not play politics when they're judges.
And I think we're going to get one of those type of individuals, regardless of who the president picks tonight.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.